Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 174, entitled, How to Use NLP to Improve Your Mental State, Emotions, and Daily Success, I chat with Tony Wrighton. Tony Wrighton is a Sky Sports presenter, author, and NLP trainer and master practitioner. And in today's episode, Tony breaks down neuro-linguistic programming and talks about its many practical implementations into daily life. He talks about how it works, the many applications of it, and how to use it right away to improve your life in a vast number of areas. Whether for confidence, fears, dating, sales, or interpersonal persuasion of virtually any kind, NLP can assist greatly, and Tony shows us exactly how. If you're wondering how to use NLP to improve your mental and emotional well-being and to increase your day-to-day success across all areas of life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey, are you following me on social media yet? If not, quit being a complete psychopath and follow me now. Seriously, I post regularly throughout the week and love giving behind-the-scenes updates on the daily life of an elite man. I'm currently most active on Instagram and Facebook, so follow me on both. Get day-to-day updates on book recommendations, biohacking tools, elite man know-how, and all other glorious content I probably shouldn't post about but do anyways. Whether pics of me trying to conquer the world in my personal life, or whether cutting-edge research on the potential cures to all disease, keep up to date and have a few laughs by following either, or more preferably both, my social media pages now. I'm at Justin Stenstrom on both Instagram and Facebook, so it should be very easy to find me. That's JustinStenstrom on both these social media platforms. Follow me now and see exactly what I'm up to throughout the week. Get your daily dose of elite man entertainment and information Sunday through Saturday. Instagram and Facebook at Justin Stenstrom. If you wear contact lenses and find yourself dreading that annual appointment to renew your prescription, then you're going to love Simple Contacts. It's a fantastic new company that makes this annoying process very, well, simple. Simple Contacts lets you renew your expired contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of lenses from your phone or computer in just minutes. Simple Contacts brings the doctor's office to wherever you are, whenever you need it. You can take the Simple Contacts vision test online in 5 minutes and a real doctor reviews it for you and renews your prescription. You save time, you save money, and you save yourself a major headache. And if you have an unexpired prescription, just upload a photo of it or your doctor's info and order lenses in just minutes for a great price. They do all the hard work for you. This is vision care for the 21st century. Also, Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses imaginable, and their prices are unbeatable. The vision test is just $20. You can compare that with an annual appointment, which can cost over $200 without insurance. They have some of the best prices on contacts, and the shipping is free. Best of all, my listeners get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order. To save $30 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/elite or enter the promo code elite at checkout. I do want to mention that this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. You still need those occasionally, but this is the most convenient way to renew your prescription and reorder your contacts if your vision hasn't changed. Again, check out simplecontacts.com/elite to get $30 off your first order now, or simply enter the promo code elite at checkout. Give it a try and thank me later. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Tony Wrighton from TonyWrighton.com. Tony, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me on. Been looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this too, man. As I mentioned to you a moment ago, I've been a huge fan of NLP probably for a decade or so now, and have used it periodically over the years to help with a number of different things. And actually, I haven't had a NLP-specific guest on the show, so this is going to be a first, and I'm really excited to pick your brain and actually learn more about NLP too.
Yeah, well, I've actually noticed listening to your show that you use some NLP every once in a while, so I can tell that you're into it.
Cool. What ways have you noticed that? Have you heard me just specifically talk about NLP, or have you noticed like any other subtleties of it?
Do you know what? It was actually a line in your last podcast that I was listening to, and I thought, that's a classic NLP line, because you said, I think you're talking to the guy who's into Taoism. He's called Justin Ehrlich.
Yeah.
and you said, Justin, you know, you, like me, are really into this stuff. And of course, that's a double meaning, and it's an embedded command. You like me. it's the kind of simple one, but it's good fun. And it's just, you know, NLP, much of NLP is about language. It studies how people do things well, and it's a set of skills that help improve your communication with other people and yourself. But there's lots of little kind of cheeky little fun little things you can use in there like that as well.
Love it, man. And that line too, like I totally didn't know I was saying that, but you're right, it is a classic NLP line. I used to actually use it a lot in texting girls, believe it or not, like something similar to that line is like, you like me kind of thing. And then I would subtly embed it into like little text. I don't even think of it anymore, but it was.
I think that's like kind of Neil Strauss 101 from 10 years ago, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, Neil Strauss and Ross Jeffries too, another pickup.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually,
NLP gets it. Oh, did you really?
Yeah, he was a cool dude, actually. He's really, really cool. I thought he'd be different, but he was really down to earth and just like very chill. Because you know how he was kind of over the top in some of his stuff?
Yeah.
Totally not like that at all. Really, really cool dude.
Well, this is a slight tangent, but there's another guy who was a big dating guru, inverted commas, years ago. Is it David D'Angelo?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe. And he's now like a marketing expert. Mm-hmm. Am I thinking about the right guy? Eben Pagan. That's right.
That's
his name. Yeah. I mean, his stuff is actually great value.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's actually one of the best like marketers in the world. He's really smart, and you know, before all this like business kind of stuff he's into now, he was one of the biggest dating coaches too with the David D'Angelo brand. And actually, funny thing is too, back when I started getting into the NLP stuff, that was when I was getting into the dating stuff, and him, David D'Angelo, his stuff was one of the first things I came across and like resonated, you know, the whole cocky comedy thing and standing up for yourself and giving girls shit and kind of that stuff. I mean, so it's funny, he's actually multi-talented.
Where do you think, I mean, it's very interesting. I obviously, like most single men 10 years ago, kind of went deep into that. Where do you think dating skills stand in 2018 in terms of like consciously working on kind of getting the girl with the Me Too movement and a move towards kind of being slightly more authentic and genuine in your communication with yourself and other people? Is it still relevant?
I think it's definitely relevant in certain situations, like certain... There's certain times that call for a lot of that stuff, or call for some of the principles, like the basic principles of dominance, of standing up for yourself, of being more masculine and not taking shit and giving shit, kind of having that playful attitude. That certainly is still around and can resonate well in different situations. But yeah, I think you're right. More of the authentic nature of things have come to light, and especially with the Me Too movement. Guys got to be careful about some shit that they used to get away with 10 years ago. It's
yes,
it's a changing world, you know, for sure.
Of course. And yet, I totally agree with that. And yet there was something about a lot of the work that, I mean, Neil Strauss, I still love his work. I love his, I loved the truth as well as the game. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It was very empowering, wasn't it? And just in terms of working out what it is to be a man and one's own identity, that there was a lot of that kind of area that was empowering.
That was the biggest takeaway for me in any of the dating pickup artist stuff I came across, like in actually anything I came across self-help related, you know, because I had bad anxiety, depression issues, self-esteem issues. The biggest thing that resonated for me in terms of, I think, self-confidence 10 years ago was the dating stuff, was the masculine standing up for yourself and being a man, like, you know, not taking any shit and actually being okay with stepping into that role. That was one of the biggest things from the pickup artist community and dating community that I took away. So yeah, I have a lot to be thankful or grateful for Neil Strauss and the David D'Angelo's of the world, even, you know, Ross Jeffrey to an extent.
But and I know that you're interviewing me rather than the other way around, but you know, I think there's a lot of women who would cringe at the very thought of kind of the POA community and pickup artists. Mm-hmm. Where does being a man stand in 2018? And I'm really interested in this, you know, from your perspective, because obviously you run a podcast for men. I think it's, I feel almost quite lucky that I grew up in previous times. I think it's very hard. There's so much ambiguity about what is allowed and what isn't allowed in 2018. I think it's difficult times to be a man.
Yeah, I think, see, You're 100% right. It is definitely, or has gotten harder in the last few years. I think, though, that it's going to kind of balance out again, or I'm hoping anyways that it's going to kind of balance out again, because, you know, right now as it stands, 2018, it's a little too crazy, like feminism, you know, to the left, pro-women and anti-men. And I'm hoping that this is kind of like, you know, one of those knee-jerk reactions that happens periodically in society where, you know, you come out and it's crazy for a couple of years and it kind of backs down again and, you know, things even out. So, like, I actually had this conversation with Thomas Edwards, a friend of mine and a dating coach in America. I think it can actually be a good thing. It can help people express themselves better, have women express themselves and their needs and whatever they want a little better, and also have men be more authentic, like we mentioned a moment ago, and express themselves better and get better at communicating and being more true to themselves, as opposed to getting, you know, having sex with girls because you're good at saying lines or you're good at using sort of manipulative techniques. But yeah, I think right now, as it stands, it's been tougher over the last couple of years. But I think if guys keep putting forward the right foot, and, you know, keep sticking with the basics of being a good man, a good person, and also not backing down from shit. Like, you know, if something's right, you stand by it. And if your approach and your vibe, your attitude towards women and, you know, attracting women, dating women is a good one, I think if you're strong in that conviction, the right things will happen for you. Things will fall into place.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it is... if things have gone too far the other way, it's kind of understandable because of all the horrific stories that have come out that never came out before. I mean, you know, Hollywood is just one example, and over in this country, politics as well, and entertainment. But at the same time, it is, I think, most reasonable men want equality, but we also want to be men and understand ourselves and know what is right and what isn't.
Yeah.
And I think, God, if I was single now, I wouldn't even know the rules. do you have to get someone to sign a contract before you take them home for the night?
Yeah, you might.
It's an absolute minefield out there.
Yeah, you might. Hopefully it never gets to that point. I think, like I said, hopefully it's going to balance out a bit, and this might just be the far end of things.
I'm sure it will get to that point. Sure it will.
Yeah. I mean, guys listening, they just got to keep being good guys and also fighting the good fight in terms of being true to who they are and not getting walked over by women. Like, it's so easy to fall into the trap of thinking, you know, guys are evil, or, you know, the things that we do to try to attract women or go out and date women are bad, but they're really not. They're just men being men, and that's the way of life. We're just, as a society, going through a little roadblock trying to figure it out again and get things back in order, balance it back out. But I think guys, you know, good guys anyways, got to keep fighting that fight and keep doing the right things, and it's gonna eventually play out and work itself out. But Tony, I know we kind of got off on a little tangent here, but it's interesting.
Yeah,
I love this.
I'm interested too. Yeah.
But for guys listening now who haven't maybe heard of your name before, what is it exactly that you do right now? And we'll dive into some of the NLP stuff in a moment, but how did you get into the NLP work?
Well, I mean, I know you've already briefly mentioned that I'm a Sky Sports presenter. That's the biggest sports channel here in the UK. And I'm an author as well, and have my own podcast too. And so that's my kind of background. I talk to people about sports. That's my day job. But always on the side, I was interested in this kind of, oh, he's the self-development guy. That's what they always said about me at my TV station here, because I was into NLP as well. And NLP, for any of your listeners who don't know what it is, it's a terrible name which was invented in the 70s, just about the time when kind of computers were the big thing. So I think they thought they needed to give it a computery type name, but it's essentially used by millions of people around the world to help people manage their moods, run their lives more successfully, help with personal development. It's used a lot in business and self-improvement. It's used a lot in sport, which overlaps with my other interest, and sales and therapy and coaching and that kind of thing. So I studied to the highest level that you can do in NLP, and then got a 3-book deal with Virgin Books to write books about NLP, but making it super simple. So every technique in every book takes a minute or less.
Wow, that's awesome, man. Yeah. No, as I mentioned to you too, I think before, maybe even on this call already, but I've been in the NLP for about a decade now, and I stumbled across, one of the first guys I stumbled across was Paul McKenna, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah, I trained with him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah. he's actually like one of the best in the world, or one of the most famous NLP practitioners in the world. Him and I believe, like, you know, Richard Bandler.
Right up there.
But yeah, I was listening to some things on confidence that he had back in the day. And it was just very simple techniques. But once I started doing them, like the first one I did, I remember was a little trigger of the thumb and the index finger, and just pressing those and getting into like a good mood, and then pressing those together and making that association of having unbelievable confidence or feeling great. And then anytime I needed confidence or like a little boost of confidence, or maybe I actually found it because I was anxious all the time. And that's what I was using it for. Whenever I get a little anxious, I would do this little trigger point. I'd touch that, and then I'd take a deep breath in and out, and then my anxiety would slowly alleviate. And that was one of my favorite things. It was like, wow, this is so cool. I have a little tool that I'm walking around with that I don't actually have to carry because I already have it, and I can just pull it out and use it anytime I want. And I still use that periodically every time I go like on stage for a speech, or if I need like a little extra boost of confidence for something. It's like I do that little technique and it works. I feel great.
So that is the technique known as anchoring, and it's fantastic, isn't it? And a lot of people know it as the technique that was made famous by Pavlov's dogs, which was Pavlov had the dogs, and every time he fed the dogs, he would ring a bell and they would salivate. And after a while, he could ring the bell. Even if he wasn't going to feed them, they would salivate. And this is the technique of anchoring. You can elicit an emotion or a reaction by something that someone can see or hear or feel or smell or taste. But we don't really kind of tend to have smell or taste around quite so much. It's very clever. And, you know, I mean, a simple way of knowing that it works is if you hear one of your favorite songs from childhood, you will instantly feel a certain way when you hear it. Or how do you feel when you look at a picture of your favorite holiday ever? That's anchoring. That's a perfect example of anchoring. Unfortunately, we often dwell with the negative stuff. So it's great that you've been anchoring those positive emotions. And I absolutely love anchoring. I think one of the things that's important with anchoring is sometimes the anchor can diminish in power over time. If you're using that thumb and forefinger all the time, after a while, it starts to lose its intensity and you just have to kind of top up those good emotions. But you mentioned Paul McKenna and Richard Bandler. Richard Bandler invented NLP, and Paul McKenna used to run the world's biggest training company in NLP. And I did my master practitioner with both of them. So I was lucky to train from them, and they have a lot of fun with it as well.
Yeah, how is Richard Bandler? He seems like a really cool dude, but very unique in like personality, like kind of witty, but like gives you shit at the same time. Is he like that?
He is. When I was deep into training, I used to say for quite a while that he was probably the most compelling speaker that I'd ever seen on a stage. And anyone who gets the chance to see him, I would recommend it. You know, if you can go to an intro talk or maybe do a training with him or something like that. He's certainly not to everybody's taste. because it is pretty in your face.
Yeah.
But the hypnotic element of what he does, part of NLP is based around hypnosis, hypnotic language, linguistic skills, and how you can use language to communicate more effectively with yourself as well as other people. And he's just an absolute master at that. So it's pretty trippy.
Yeah. Every time I've seen one of his talks, it's like, it's hilarious, but it's also... it's also effective, obviously. I mean, the guy, I read his book too, How to Get the Life You Want. There's a ton of good chapters in there. Funny thing is, I've used a couple of the things specifically, but there's a chapter in there about getting over a breakup. And I've used that specifically to great effect in past breakups in my life over the years, last couple of years, especially too. Like I've had to like, you know, go back and think like, oh yeah, there was a great chapter on that. Let me go back. And literally it helps you get over a woman or a heartbreak or something like that. Because I mean, do you know the chapter I'm referring to?
Do you know what? I've got that. I have got that book somewhere, but I haven't looked at it in years.
Yeah. I'll refresh your memory for it.
Yeah. I'd love to know. I'd love to know what they use. Because that was written by Bandler and McKenna, that book, wasn't it?
That one was actually just Bandler, I believe.
Oh, okay, cool.
I believe, cool. Yeah. But I'm sure, you know, they both know it. So for the breakup one, which I've talked about this too with my guys a few times, because, you know, it's just so effective, is the breakup one is... If you're stuck on a girl, if she, you know, breaks your heart, whatever it is, instead of picturing her, like they have this exact thing, and I'm not going to get it entirely right, but when you think of her, like you think of all the great things about her and how much she was awesome and how perfect she was for you. Instead, like you play that out once, and then you go through and kind of like give yourself one more time to do it, and then you go back to it and replay or reverse it. I think you might even play it backwards and then replay it forwards again. And this time it's like horrible. Like you think of all the bad things she does. You think of all the horrible things she did to you. You know, all the negative flaws she had, all the terrible things she's done over the years to you and all the pain she's caused. And that's the new picture you play. And then you might even, I think, throw like music in it or something, like, you know, comical music. But so you basically change the picture of the ideal picture you had before into the new one, where it's horrible and it's just like disgusting. And then you even can think of like her face transposed into like the most disgusting thing in the world, like say a pile of dump or
I don't know, I'm uncomfortable with that,
or puke or something like that. But every time so you're just making that as disgusting as possible for her, and it takes away the pain it has over you for thinking of how great she was and how much of a loss that is. So you play that over a few times, and eventually you get it takes the feelings out. It doesn't, like, that feeling for me anyways, it hasn't resonated like, all right, every time I think of that girl, I think of she's just a disgusting person, all this other stuff. Even though that's what you're picturing in the moment, what it's done is take away the power it had over me of her being this ideal person, and just kind of took the weight off of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. There was a part there where I thought, oh, you're kind of edging towards some really, I think if some people did that, it could edge towards hatred of someone almost, which I'm not sure that would be necessarily helpful for some people.
Yep.
But one of the things that you can do really nicely with NLP is association and dissociation. So the things that we kind of, the emotions that we tend to associate with more tend to be stronger, and the stimulus that we most, so like if we associate deeply with a certain color, we'll experience it more really and more viscerally. And if you make if you're thinking about something or someone, and you make the picture smaller and you shrink the picture, and you're imagining it like a little kind of black and white telly from the 80s that doesn't work properly, and you put it in the corner of the room, and now it's the color of a postage stamp, all of a sudden the emotional power that someone might have over you, it's not so powerful. Perhaps you love the sound of their voice, and all of a sudden you're thinking about turning the volume down, and you're making it kind of very monotone voice. Maybe you even change their voice to a kind of cartoon character or something like that. And then you kind of imagine switching the radio off. You can change the what are called submodalities of the way that you experience that person, and that could help. When you start thinking about all the terrible things, or even like, you know, superimposing someone's head over a steaming pile of
dog shit.
I don't feel comfortable with that, because I think that's, I worry that young men can get kind of quite misguided by stuff like that, and that'll end up being like a real sense of hatred. Not always when people split up, is there one fault or the other. They might just not be compatible for each other.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're absolutely right, 100%. I think that Bandler is more suggesting it in terms of the ability to decrease the power of the effects of thinking that she's an ideal person, and removing that from your life in terms of, you know, I think that might even have been the last part. Yeah. Like he says, like, and as an add-on, like if this other stuff isn't working well, try this out too.
I've got a good example of how I first ever saw that technique used in a slightly different area, and that is Paul McKenna was teaching us about submodalities and anchoring and the way that we experience the world with our different senses. And he said to the audience, and it was probably about 500 people on this training, and he said, is there anyone here who would like to give up a certain food? And loads of people put up their hand, and he got someone up on the stage, and she said, look, I always eat biscuits, and I just can't stop eating biscuits. And he says, how much would you like to give up eating biscuits? And she says, I really want to give up eating biscuits. I've got a problem. I just can't stop. I just don't have any self-control over it. And he says, are you sure? Because when we finished, you're not going to be eating biscuits. and she's like, yeah, I'm up for it. It's cool. He starts doing this thing where he's getting her to imagine biscuits in her mind. At first, she's kind of absolutely salivating. And then he changes the nature of the way she looks at biscuits. Firstly, he makes the picture black and white, and then he makes it a grainy picture. And then he changes the way that she imagines them tasting. And then he starts to get this imaginary bowl with some disgusting stuff in there. He's getting her to imagine putting her own hair in there and a little bit of vomit and some biscuits. And sure enough, at the end of it, you know, the thought of eating these biscuits was almost making her vomit on the stage. So that's a good example of, you know, how she experienced something, how she communicated with herself about biscuits could be altered quite quickly. And I've done that loads of times, helping people with, I don't know, fear of flying, or, you know, I worked with someone who had a phobia of eggs once, so we did something fairly similar with that as well.
Yeah, no, I think Bandler mentions that as well, as in terms of, I think, helping someone quit cigarettes, like they put the cigarette into some kind of bowl of shit or something, whatever it was,
and did
the same type of thing. So, the principle of it works for sure, but yeah, I think, you know, you got to kind of be a little careful with it. I want to break this down. How does NLP work specifically in the mind? Like, what's going on? We mentioned a couple of things with, like, the visualization and the shrinking of the pictures and the black and white. Why does that actually work, and why is it such an effective technique?
Well, NLP is a kind of like an umbrella for a series of techniques. There's a load of linguistic stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a load of changing stuff in the mind. There's a load of hypnotic stuff as well. So you've got the neuro, the linguistic, and the kind of programming in there. And in terms of hypnosis, we often accept what comes after certain words without even really thinking about it. I mean, to give you a good example, when I first started getting into NLP, I was a radio presenter. And this is right at the start of my kind of NLP career. But I was just interested in it from a personal perspective. And because I was a radio presenter, I had the perfect forum to try out these techniques. So I was like a six-month course, and I was going on four-day weekends to learn this stuff. Then I was coming back, and I was able to use these techniques on my radio show. And I was using loads of linguistic techniques, and I wasn't really very good at it because I was only just starting to learn. But I was trying my best to just, you know, practice and use language to practice using NLP. And one day I layered the techniques on pretty thick, and I don't think I was very good at it. And the boss called me into his office after his show, and I thought, I'm in real trouble here, because I've been speaking in riddles probably, and there's nothing worse than a bad NLP-er. And he leaned back in his chair and he put his hands behind his head and he said, "Tony, I don't know what you've been doing, but your listening figures have gone through the roof."
Wow.
And it was bizarre, because on most radio stations, the breakfast show has the most amount of listeners, and then the rest of the day, people have slightly less listeners. But on our station, I did the drive time show on the way home, and I had more listeners than the breakfast show. I'm pretty sure that using these linguistic skills to get people to listen for longer, get more people to listen, and get them to feel better about listening just helped my listening figures along. And they stayed like that for the next 2 or 3 years as well.
What were some of the things you were saying? What were some of the techniques?
Well, firstly, I kind of got better at storytelling. So I got better at helping people to associate with the stories that I was saying. So if I was talking about something with, I don't know, if I was talking about being on holiday, for example, or giving away a holiday, I would help people to really associate with the colors, the blue of the sky and the green of the trees or whatever it might be, and the sounds of the birds chirruping in the trees, and the way things feel as well. For instance, the temperature of the air on your skin, you know, when you're on holiday, and it's like kind of stepping out into a warm bath. All of a sudden, I started to kind of become a little bit better at communicating. Then I started to use persuasive language as well. I started to use what I like to call the most persuasive word in the world, which would potentially help people to listen for longer or enter a competition or just feel better about listening.
What's that? The most persuasive word?
Do you know what it is? Have a guess.
I don't know. You?
No. There's a social psychologist called Ellen Langer. Mm. And she did an experiment. Do you know what? I bet you've heard of it, Justin. It's called the photocopier experiment.
Photocopier.
And it's quite old. Ellen Langer is fantastic, by the way. Definitely worth a lazy Google when you've got 5 minutes. And she and her colleagues found that they could jump to the queue at the front of the queue at a photocopier more often simply by using a certain word and then a statement. So they tried three different statements. And the first one was, may I use the photocopier because I'm in a rush? And when they said that, they had a 94% success rate.
I've heard of this. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second one, they said, may I use the photocopier? And even with no reason, they had a 60% success rate, which shows that you should always try and cubage. And the third one was, may I use the photocopier because I have to make some copies? And the magic word, the most persuasive word in the world, is because. Yep. Because that final because is a very poor reason, but it had a 93% success rate. And we seem to accept the word because without even listening to the reason itself. When somebody says the word because, we have this kind of linguistic shortcut in our head, which means we accept whatever comes next because we just do. And you probably did that as you were listening then.
Yeah, that is really cool, man. I definitely have heard of that study or whatever it was that they conducted with the copywriter. I didn't know who it was, though, that carried it out. That's really cool, though. That's fascinating. And I'm sure people listening, you know, whether you're in sales or business or negotiating or whether you want something done with your girlfriend or your husband, that little trick right there can help them a ton.
Bit naughty, but some people say to me, I mean, it's quite interesting with the NLP stuff. You know, over the years, people have said, look, isn't it manipulation what you're doing? To which I always say, all communication is manipulation to a certain extent. If you had a better way of communicating with your listeners to make sure that you doubled your listenership, you'd do it. If you've got a 7-year-old and you want to persuade them to tidy their room, you will use a better way of communicating. One of the chapters in my book, in one of my books, is how to persuade a 7-year-old to tidy their room. if you've got a better way, you'll do it, right? Because, I mean, you just will.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that go with the 7-year-old?
I always say that there are some people who've trained to the highest level in NLP and they're not very good. And there's some people, and I would say you are one of them, who haven't trained in NLP, but have natural NLP skills that means they're good communicators. That is like, it's a very simple one. You give people a question to which it's impossible to say no to. So you don't say to your 7-year-old, will you tidy your room? Because there's two answers, basically, yes or no. So you might say to them, do you want to tidy your room before dinner or after dinner? To which, linguistically, the answer no just doesn't work. Now, they still might just say no, in which case you're going to have to use some of the other techniques in the book. But it's a good start.
Yeah. No, I love that. I feel like, and I appreciate the compliment too, but I feel like I kind of do that with, I have little nieces and nephews, 3 and 4, and no, 3 and a 5-year-old. And I feel like I kind of do like little techniques like that too, where it's, instead of asking them outright, it's more of like an insinuation that it's going to happen. And it's just putting it in a nicer frame and having a nice tone of voice too, I think helps. The way you express it out loud and communicate it to them, it's like, this is a positive thing. You want to do this or do you want to do this? It's not like, do you have to do this or, you know, this is the choice or that's the choice.
Definitely. A tone is so important. There was a while back, they used to say that communication is 55% nonverbal. So what you're doing with your body language, and then 38% tone, and I think 7% words.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure who actually said that originally, but I'm not sure it's got its basis in scientific research.
Yeah.
But, you know, it still stands that a lot of it is based around tonality. Yeah. I always think Americans are much better at, their voices have a much nicer kind of rhythm and tone for them than most Brits. We kind of just talk like that, a little bit monotone. Whereas you Americans, you have a much nicer kind of range to your voice.
Yeah, well, that certainly doesn't apply to you being a you know, fantastic presenter and broadcaster.
Oh, well, thank you very much,
but I think generally you might be right. But on the other hand, I think Brits have a much better vocabulary. The words they use are 10 times better than most Americans.
Really?
We have a very shitty, plain language, and I think we use just, you guys have a lot more sophisticated words that are in your repertoire for sure.
We were just, I was in China last week working with Sky Sports, and I was presenting a pool tournament, a 9-ball pool tournament for 6 days in Shanghai. And one of my co-presenters was American and is well into his language. And at one point I did this thing saying, oh, well, coming up tomorrow, we've got two fantastic semifinals for you. And he laughed at the word I used next because he'd never heard it before. But I didn't think it was that unusual a word, but maybe it's more of a British word. I said, coming up tomorrow, we've got two semifinals for your delectation. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. You've heard that word, right?
Yeah, it's a good word, yeah. Actually. Really good word.
But I mean, this guy's a writer and a broadcaster. I was surprised he hadn't worded it. I was still quite pleased with using the word delectation, but...
Yeah, that's not something you would find here in America. There's probably less than 1% of the people who even know what that means, but...
Oh, yeah. Really? Okay,
it's a great word.
Google it if you haven't heard of it.
Have you heard of AutoSlash yet? If not, listen up because they are incredible and the single best rental booking site I've come across when it comes to finding the best deal on renting a car. If you're like me and you travel a lot, AutoSlash can be a lifesaver. Unlike other car rental booking sites which offer up standard rates, AutoSlash searches hundreds of coupons and discount codes for all the major rental companies to find you the lowest rate possible, taking into account discounts you already are eligible for based on your membership affiliations. This includes discounts for members of AAA, Costco, AARP, credit cards, and various frequent flyer programs that are free to sign up for. Instead of searching all over the place and comparing rates, AutoSlash does all the work for you to find the lowest rate possible. Best of all, it's a free service. Once booked, you can track pricing on your reservation, and AutoSlash will keep on looking for better deals right up until your pickup date. Rates often drop as the pickup date approaches, so you can often save a significant amount of money this way. Not only will they check the company you're currently booked with, but all other companies as well. If they find a lower rate, they'll email you so you can rebook and save money. Many customers rebook multiple times as rates drop and AutoSlash finds better deals. AutoSlash searches all the major companies, including many discount brands. Renters on average save 30% or more using AutoSlash, and AutoSlash saves customers millions of dollars per year. I used to spend hours and hours trying to look up all sorts of coupons from so many different sites. I've literally wasted numerous days of my life trying to save money on getting a nice but affordable rental. But now I don't have to worry about that. Why? Because AutoSlash has my back and they take care of all of this for me. And quite honestly, I kind of love the fact that they get to help me and you, the regular hardworking elite man, save some extra cash instead of having to fork it over to the massive corporate rental companies. Always a plus. And did I mention it's totally free? Yep, if you travel regularly or even make one trip this year for that matter, make sure you check out AutoSlash now. They will definitely save you a boatload of money and get you the best deal possible. Go to AutoSlash.com right now to start saving. Again, that's AutoSlash.com. So going back to NLP, we talked a little about the linguistic aspect of it.
Yeah.
We talked about the anchoring aspect of it. What other aspects of it are there that are practical for people to use in say, everyday life?
One of the things that I've found is very powerful from a personal perspective is taking it a few minutes or longer out to recharge. When I first started learning NLP, they called it self-hypnosis. And now I'd probably call it meditation. But, you know, on my podcast, Zestology as well, so many people talk about the importance of some kind of moment during the day where you just kind of sit and recharge. And I do that every day, and I know that's made a massive difference. But as well as that, I think it's what's really helpful and what NLP is quite good at is working out what works. So some people say that the definition of NLP is a study of what works. And I'm like massively, I'm kind of quite left brain, quite logical, quite geeky. I like to track things. I love a spreadsheet. And more recently, as I kind of look at my energy levels and my wellness and my health, I like to make it a note of what works and then do more of it. And so I track with a spreadsheet every evening. And there's one thing that I've found has worked better than any other for my kind of energy and wellness and focus and creativity levels. And that is when I switch off for a certain amount of period every day. If I switch off all technology and I unplug for kind of 2 hours or more, my energy levels are up 10, 20%. Because it's normally the best time of day. And if you think about it, most of the things that we really love in the world don't involve screens, whether that's food or hanging out with friends or exercise or sex. And if sex involves screens for you, then maybe you need to get out.
So is that a part of NLP? Or is that something you've added into your life kind of to as an addition to it?
Well, the unplugging is something that I've done. I've worked out through NLP works for me. So I think one of the wonderful things that we're all different, and one of the wonderful things about NLP is it encourages you to find out what works. What works for you, do more of it. What works for other people, and how can you cherry pick the best bits of what Justin does or what Tony does and take that into your own life. And I found when I unplug and switch off, technology, I'm just so overstimulated by it so much. When I unplug and start to switch off, I feel better. And actually now I've brought out a course, a program on using the skills of NLP to unplug, which has been quite nice.
Nice. I like it. There probably is a physiological component to that as much as, say, a mental component as well. Like the more research they're doing on EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies, and, you know, things like Wi-Fi in your cell phone, that's actually damaging to your cells. And your brain especially, it changes the structure of them. It changes the function of them. And, man, I think the more research that comes out into it, I mean, it's a pretty new field. Last, like, 10 years or so, they're really coming out with stuff. But I think the more going forward, and especially the more that our world changes into a more of a technological world, the more we're going to realize just how dangerous it can be in things like EMF blockers and shutting off Wi-Fi periodically. I think those are going to be implemented into our lives more and more.
Definitely. Everything is better for me when I unplug. And I totally agree with you from a physiological level as well. There's no way, for example, I said just then that I like tracking, and I like tracking devices as well. I used to wear a Jawbone, for example. Do you remember the Jawbones? I don't know if they even make them now. It's a bit like a Fitbit. But most of these trackers that you can buy have Bluetooth, which is constantly on. Mm-hmm. Now, Bluetooth is quite a small dose of radiation, but ladies and gentlemen, mostly gentlemen on this podcast, it is still radiation. You're wearing a little device which is sending out a little radiation signal hundreds of times a minute. That's not that cool.
Yeah.
So I wear an Oura Ring, actually. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're pretty cool. They have an airplane mode on the device. It's a ring that you wear, and it measures your sleep, heart rate variability, respiratory rate, exercise, deep sleep, light sleep, REM sleep. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That is really cool. I like that they have a airplane mode too. I actually got as a gift a Fitbit past Christmas. I have Christmas and my birthday are 3 days apart, so I forget if it was Christmas or birthday. I think it was Christmas, a Christmas gift from a family member, and I was like, oh, this is really cool, and I was actually really excited. And then, you know, a couple of days later, I'm like, honestly, I'm not going to use this thing because I don't want to have to constantly wear it and be exposed to the EMFs, and I don't think it even came with an airplane mode like your thing. Maybe it did, but...
They haven't got airplane mode because I looked into it.
Yeah, I'm like, honestly, I don't need this. It's got some cool features on it. It can do some pretty cool shit, but I don't really need it, and I don't want to be sleeping with it and, you know, having a constant exposure to the EMFs. Even when I go to bed, I turn my phone off onto airplane mode just because it's, you know, in direct vicinity of my head and when I'm sleeping, you know?
Me too. Yeah, I think about it a lot. And guys, please don't put your mobile phone into your front pocket right next to your nuts. Because that's just delivering a healthy dose of 4G right into... Tim Ferriss did an interesting experiment, didn't he? I'm pretty sure it's Tim Ferriss. He measured his sperm count, and then he put his phone in his pants every day, in his front trousers every day for like 12 weeks, and then measured his sperm count again, and it was considerably down.
Wow. Man, I believe that. Man, that's a surefire way to get testicular cancer.
Hopefully not surefire, because I do it sometimes, but I try and put it into airplane mode when I do stick it in my trousers.
Yeah, it just reminded me of like that South Park episode too, where one of the guy's fathers has like massive nuts and he's walking around. He puts them on a wheelbarrow. I forget. Pretty ridiculous, but it's a pretty funny episode.
I know this is audio, not video, but I've got one of these as well, which is like, it's a case that goes on your phone that there's actually aluminium in that front cover. So it means that the EMFs kind of really go out the side of the phone, but they don't come through the front of the phone. So when you're holding it to your ear, or even you've got it in your pocket, theoretically, they shouldn't be affecting you. I'm not sure how accurate it is. I think airplane mode's probably better system.
Yeah, and honestly, man, the research is brand new. Like, it's such a novel field that we really don't understand how detrimental it can be, or maybe it's innocuous in a lot of cases. Like, you know, cell phone, maybe that's just not enough power to cause any damage. And even breathing in air, where there's plenty of toxins in the air that we breathe, that might be infinitely more harmful to our bodies than, say, EMFs from a cell phone. But I think it is smart to be conscious of it, and when you can, in different situations, try to reduce the amount of EMFs you're exposed to. I think it's probably the safe option.
Yeah.
Tony, and going back to the NLP, how does the visual, why is that such a key aspect, the visualization of things, and say, like, turning pictures in your mind from, like, colored pictures to black and white, and also shrinking? Like, what is going on there for that to be an effective technique for, say, getting over a fear or phobia or a number of the other things it's helpful for?
Well, you're changing the way that you're experiencing a memory, and therefore the emotions surrounding that memory as well. And there's some people that will have listened to that and said, yeah, why is it so powerful? And there's other people that will have listened to it and they all have said, it's not that powerful. And that is because most of us have a favored system of experiencing the world. For some people, it is visual, and I'm a very visual person. And so the way things look are very important to me. I love a beautiful view of a nice sunset, for example. Some people are very auditory. So the way things sound are super important to them. The sound of someone's voice, the sound, you know, they can't go to sleep if they can hear the slightest tick-tock of a grandfather clock from the next room, for example. And then for some, and this is probably my kind of weaker principal sense, the way things feel are very important. The way that they feel about things, and literally the kind of the visceral feel of, I don't know, the seat on the back of your chair, or padding around barefoot, or the temperature of the air on your skin. And so you can, with all these things, you can work to change your experience of the world. If you are, often when someone says scared of flying, what's happened is they've taken a flight where it's been a nightmare, and they've developed this phobia of flying. And you can change the way that they think about that. And you can actually use every sense, but if they're particularly visual, you will start to get them thinking about that flight, and you might start making the picture black and white and kind of grainy and moving the TV away. And then you might do what you mentioned early on, and you might rewind it in color to really mess the brain up. And then you turn the volume down, or you change the volume in some way, you make it higher or lower, or you put it in a different place behind someone's head or ahead of it, and you change the way that it feels as well. So yeah, there's loads of kind of fun and games that you can have with experiencing the world.